The insurance industry is the backbone of the economy. It's the reason we're able to take risks, and it's the force that helps put us all back together when disaster strikes. So in this podcast, I'll be spending some quality time with key CEOs and leaders to ask them how certain world events can impact the insurance industry and how the insurance industry is impacting the world. We'll also be talking about how they rose to the C-suite. It seems like people either fall into the insurance industry almost by accident, or they have a family connection to it. One of our guests today is an example of the latter. I'm Meg Green, managing editor of the online insurance magazine Insider Engage, and this is CEO Perspectives. This is an unusual episode featuring not one, but two industry icons, Brandon Switzer and Tony Markell. Together, they have decades of insurance experience. Brandon is dean at St. John University's Greenberg School of Risk Management and the former president and CEO of Guy Carpenter. He sits on several boards, including Fairfax Financial, Odyssey Re, and Crum & Foster. Tony Markell is the retired vice chairman, president, and chief operating officer of Markell, a Glen Allen, Virginia-based excess and surplus lines underwriter. Tony still serves on the board there. I had a chance to speak with them, and as I heard, they've got a lot to say about the importance of education, the evolution of technology, and how it can't replace the critical role of relationships in the insurance business. I caught up with them just before they were going on stage for a fireside chat in front of an audience in New York. Brandon, can we start with you? Could you set the stage for us and tell us what we're doing here today?
Well, Tony is here as the main attraction of an event that's co-sponsored by the Greenberg School, the Maurice R. Greenberg School of Risk Management at St. John's University. We have within the school what we call the Center for the Study of Insurance Regulation, and we try to run an annual conference on the subject of insurance regulation themes in the industry. And the other group that co-sponsors this is the Society for Law and Insurance, and they underwrite the event, and anything left over, the proceeds, and I'm happy to say there are proceeds from today, go to our students and help them in many different ways.
And how long have you known Tony?
I've known Tony in the industry for more years than you've probably been alive, but I've really known him, I guess, well over the last decade.
And Tony, it's great to see you. It's been a long time. When did you retire?
Well, I don't know whether I'm officially, nobody's thrown me a party yet, but active duty probably about 2011, 2012. My wife got ovarian cancer, and so I really was out of the office for the better part of a year while she was fighting it, and went back after she passed away, and it sort of taken a little of the spark out of it and so forth. So I stayed for about a year, but I'm still on the board of directors of Markell, and not down in the nitty-gritty day-to-day stuff, but I think I've still got a fairly good understanding of what makes insurance tick.
But you're still very engaged in the insurance industry and what's happening?
Well, put it this way, I still follow it. I'm at 60,000 feet, still maintain some semblance of knowledge of the regulations and the regulatory climate and that type, but only through my board position. So I'll swoop in, and but I always preface a remark by saying, now I don't know what the hell I'm talking about now, but have you considered? So that's about the extent of my involvement in day-to-day stuff right now.
So you are, I think, it's the third generation at Markell. Is that right?
I am. And the Markell family ran Markell through three generations, and it's only been in the last 10 years that the leadership of Markell has become non-family. We've got some fabulous younger people running the company now doing a heck of a job, but it's the first time since its founding in 1930.
And I don't know if you remember, but I visited your campus, it's probably 20 years ago, and we talked then about how important it was to you to have that chain of command lined up and how to have a succession plan in order.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's just like any other business. You're only as good as the people running it, and you daggone better have a stable of people to fill the voids as people retire and so forth. And I think we've groomed a terrific group of successors doing a wonderful job.
How did you get into the industry?
Meg, my first title was son. I've got a wonderful cartoon on my desk that shows a very official, obviously, well, the nameplate on his desk shows V. Schmedley, Vice President. And out the window behind him is a big sign that says Schmedley and Sons, okay? And there's a little guy standing in front of his desk with a eye shade on and a pencil behind his ear. And the official-looking vice president is saying, I don't know what you're bitching about, Grumpley. We both had an equal opportunity when we came here to work for my father. So all I got to do is look at that cartoon and know from whence I came. You know, I worked summers in school. We were relatively small. I love the family environment that my grandfather and his four sons had created, treating people with respect, the old golden rule. Didn't want to go to law school. And so I just gravitated right out of college. And I can honestly say that they treated me better than I treated them probably, but it's been a pretty good marriage. So.
And what would you say to Brandon students who are looking at getting into the insurance industry?
The first thing is everybody's got to have it. When you look at other industries, and they not only have to compete for the business, but in a lot of cases, they have to generate the need of the ultimate buyer. In the insurance business, not a question from a financial security standpoint whether they can or cannot buy insurance. They've got to have insurance. So you start off one sale ahead. He's already convinced he's got to have insurance. The question is with whom? And I just love the industry, particularly the excess and surplus lines side of it, which always had entrepreneurial spirit, product development, filling voids, and that type of thing. And I have maintained just a cadre of wonderful friends in the industry. I mean, it was competitive, but there was always friendly competition. I just think it's a great industry, and obviously based on my size, I haven't missed too many meals. So.
How tall are you, Tony?
6'5". Yeah.
And when you look out into the insurance landscape today, is there anything you would change if you could?
I know from our standpoint, as we were running the companies, our company from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and into the 2000s, I really felt strongly that we had wonderful people, educated, intellectual, inquisitive, challenging, and I have given that group of people credit for taking us to where we've been. But candidly, and this plays to the education aspect that Brandon's so involved in it, the young men and women that we have in the industry today, and I'm really mostly reading through the Markel people, are just even a step or two or three above what we had. Education that tremendously well-educated than just the arts and, you know, general education, but most of them have pursued specific insurance-related courses and that type of thing. I think today's industry is being run by a group of, frankly, better educated, better technically strong individuals than we were fortunate enough even to have 25 or 30 years ago, although I love those people.
Brandon, could you speak to that? You have such a robust and risk management program. That's still a relatively new thing for the industry.
Well, yeah. The joke always is that so many of us, because I was in the industry before pitching up at St. John's and the Greenberg School, we got there by accident, no pun intended. So many people didn't have any training whatsoever. The statistics, at least the latest I have, are that 95% of people who are hired into the insurance industry don't go to business school. And of that, the schools who teach risk and insurance as a core discipline, as a major, and not to speak of as we do at the graduate level, are very few in number. So it's still a relatively specialized educational field. We try through the way we teach it and present it academically, but just as importantly, in some respects, even more importantly, how we do it experientially with interaction with our board member companies, with bringing students to company and site visits, to taking them on classes which for credit go to the major insurance and reinsurance centers of the world. We're trying to give a small and hopefully growing cadre of what Tony described as just generally better educated young people the wherewithal to get into this business and make an impact.
And Tony, that ties in to what you were saying about this, the next generation coming in, being better prepared, higher educated.
And you know, if you think about this industry, there are still opportunities to innovate and create and fill voids. But I would suggest that they're not as plentiful as they used to be. And when the industry is really developing in its heyday, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. So then you get down to the point where it's difficult to distinguish products. You know, one generally looks a little, and they all have their variations. I'm not trying to completely say it's cookie cutter, but they look very much alike. So the distinctive issue that any company brings to the table is their people in delivery of those products. And I think we're hiring a much more well-educated group coming in. I think this group, consistent with what St. John's does, is seeking more and more specific education. And frankly, it's necessary because if it boils down to people and their ability to distinguish themselves against their people competitors, education is clearly number one. And it's the beauty is it is still a people business. I never forget, used to give speeches around, and when we were growing, and I'd say, somebody asked me, say, so what do you attribute the growth and success of Markel? And my stock answer was, well, it's a good news, bad news story. The good news is that we have hired a ton of people that are smarter than we are. The bad news is we haven't had a hell of a lot of had trouble finding them.
Do you think the insurance industry has difficulty getting young people interested in the industry? And maybe, Brandon, can we start with you?
We certainly, and this is an issue for St. John's, for the Tobin Business School, of which we are, a part. You just don't get many high school juniors and seniors who wake up every morning thinking of a career in insurance. Our task, and I think education's task as a whole, is to show young people what's out there. Tony made the point that everybody needs insurance. There aren't many disciplines where you can say to a young person, what industry do you want to work in? Where in the world do you want to work? Much less get into issues of gender or race. The insurance sector, the risk industry, is ubiquitous. And there's such a demand for talent that, and I'm always careful when I say this around lawyers, you know, we guarantee these young people jobs. And consequential pay, too. But we need more people to know about it.
Well, I think the proof of that is that once people get in, young people get in this industry, there's very little fallout going to another industry or discipline.
Thanks to Joel Cavaness for sharing his story with us today.
Might look for a different sector of insurance, but in reflection, damn few people hop out of insurance once introduced to it and pursue a totally different career path.
Well, the only thing I'd add to that is that it's the same thing, too. When you get them committed to the major, they stay with it. We have what's called in the trade a high retention rate. our graduation rate is virtually 100%, and that's well above national averages. So people who get into this field like this field, they see the opportunities in this field, and then they stay in this field. They may shift firms, and that's a problem for the industry too. The feeding frenzy after 5 years, when everybody just does musical chairs and tries to get a higher bid for themselves. And that's a flip side problem of what companies could do with, I believe, more education at higher levels as part of their employment package. But that sounds self-serving, so heck, I'm not going there, am I? I would never try to.
Shifting gears a little bit, it seems like, you know, there's a great bit of growth now in the MGA space. Some of that is being fueled from very experienced underwriters who want to go out and start their own shop. What do you think of that, the movement? I mean, I guess it also insurtechs are coming into that space. What's your overview of that growth in the MGA area?
We've always had a little bit of that, and it's a wonderful way for somebody with a focused discipline in a particular product or two to turn themselves into an underwriter, hopefully get support from an unaffiliated insurer, and basically open an underwriting shop. I will say that it seems to me, from my perspective, that giving out the pen is a whole lot less prevalent, and for good cause, than it was 20 or 25, 30 years ago. I mean, even insurance companies who will support an MGA and give them authority would do well to stay engaged in what's going on. And that wasn't always the case. I hearken back to the days when London was having its problems. Talk about regulation. I mean, but Jesus, you talk about a market that was crying for somebody to put down some guideposts. I mean, it was the wild, wild west in terms of so many areas in Lloyd's and the London market.
And I remember when Markel bought a syndicate, and yeah, I think you went over to London, and you had some comments.
Well, it was time. It was sort of, for me, Andy Warhol's 15 minutes of fame or whatever, because I got credit for more than I deserved in terms of establishing the turnaround and the formation of the Franchise Performance Board and so forth, which was badly needed, but there was a movement already afoot. I guess I just added my 6'5", 260 behind it. But fortunately, because they'd have bankrupted it again. And here's a, you know, they're all sucking off the same central fund, and if you start losing syndicates and start dragging off that central fund, it affects everybody. So they righted the ship, in my opinion, just in the nick of time. That original speech that I gave in the room at Lloyd's Library, I'll never forget. There's a little old gal, and she's in the audience, and it held about maybe 150, 200 people, maybe not that much. But anyway, it was a very confrontational speech. And when I finished the speech, this lady said, "Mr. Markel, that was very confrontational, cheeky even." And I said, "Madam, I looked around the room before I gave this talk, and I didn't see anybody older or bigger than I was, so I went ahead."
So maybe we can spin it forward and tell me what you think the industry will look like in the future. And maybe we'll start with Brandon on that. I know you were going to talk about AI and other things changing the industry.
One way or another, the way I see it, and I came in the industry 40 years ago, and everybody said at that time that insurance brokers were doomed because everything that a broker could do was going to be replaced by modern techniques of communication. There was no need for an intermediary. And look at the strength of the big brokers today. And there's always been one form or another of insurtech. It's just today we call it insurtech. That's the latest. That's the latest and greatest. AI, I think all of us are sitting around wondering what AI is and what it will become. I surely don't have an answer, but like you, Meg, I'm paid today simply to ask Tony questions. So I'm going to ask him what he thinks about AI. So why don't we toss the mic over to Tony?
I'll do that. So what do you think about
AI for just a second? I think InsurTech is a wonderful thing. But I think it's got serious limitations, and I hope it's got serious limitations, because I don't want to ever see this industry lose the personal touch. I was one of those people that lamented email and text because it negatively impacted personal communication. I mean, it used to drive me crazy walking around the office and see two people in a cubicle texting each other. And unfortunately, that is, forget insurance, that's the way things are going. And to the extent that artificial intelligence further diminishes personal communication, personal ingenuity, and creativity, I got a real problem with it. But there are always going to be low-lying things that can be taken over by InsurTech. Hell, 30 years ago, they were predicting the demise of the agent because of the ability to effectively use the internet to underwrite and price and whatever, and it hadn't happened. But there are going to be more products that lend themselves to it.
Risks become more complex. You keep chasing the outer limit of what risks you've got out there to create product for, and the ways to deliver things through the chain of risk analysis up to paying a claim. That's always going to be the same, but there's going to be shifts within it. I just think we, at our end, we've just got to make the students more tech savvy, more analytic, but at the same time, and we can't turn them into just techno geeks. As Tony said, we've got to give them that well-rounded education, because there's so much judgment. There's in a people business based on trust, based on the promise to pay. You got to have people of character, and you got to have people who have some sense of leadership. Not everybody's going to be a CEO like Tony, but everybody is going to have to lead something, or they should be capable of leading something. And I think that's what we're trying to impart into the young folks coming into the business today. At least we hope so.
Fantastic. Thank you both for speaking with me, Brandon and Tony. It was great.
Good to see you.
In this episode, I learned why Brandon Switzer and Tony Merkel support risk management education in the insurance space and the need to teach students to balance new technology with keeping a personal touch. It was also a great reminder that Tony's a giant in the industry, literally and figuratively, and he played a key role in the evolution at Lloyd's. Brandon's experience and viewpoint is also invaluable, as is his work in education. For more information on E&S insurers, please visit our website, insiderengage.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell your friends. And you can register on our website to be notified of future episodes when we'll speak to another industry leader to share their insight and their story of how they rose to the C-suite. Thanks to Brandon Switzer and Tony Merkel for speaking with me, for our producer Richard Myron at Earshot Strategies for always making us sound good, and my Delinian colleagues Goran Panzik, Celine Frost, Kareem Magero, Michelle Heatherly, Emma May, and Pierre Agabala for their help and support. For Insider Engage, I'm Meg Green.